You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Welcome to UTalk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. Music is a fantastic form of artistry. There are many variations with different instruments, genres, and capabilities from the performers. In our recent interviews, we connected with two musicians who are using music in experimental ways to invoke emotion. Let's get into it.
I'm an Alberta-based Sufi singer-songwriter and acousmatic composer, and I recently released my debut album, Manat. I also have a doctorate in music from the University of Alberta, and I have served as a music faculty for a semester at CAE Spring 2020 Voyage. My artistic practice involves sculpting with sounds of the environment, as well as sounds of cultural heritage, particularly South Asian Muslim heritage, from where I come. You could say that my music falls under the umbrella of combining soundscape composition with South Asian classical, as well as South Asian folk music traditions.
Wow. That's really, really cool. And I'll definitely want to talk about that a little bit more, but first things in order, congratulations. Received the Women in Music Honors Roll Award in Emerging Voices 2023. So I guess just how are you feeling about that?
Thank you so much. Yeah, when I was nominated for this award, I was already like all over the moon and went to Toronto for the award ceremony. And oh my goodness, I could not expect that I would receive this amazing award. And we shared that with 10 other emerging voices from across Canada. So it was kind of really, really fabulous. So Women in Music did their inaugural honors role series this year, and they had different categories. International Leaders Award and Emerging Voices Award and Excellence in Live Performance and so forth. So people at different stages of their careers in music were recognized. There was an Artist of the Year Award as well within the Emerging Voices because of the international impact of my music album, Manat. I was recognized as part of that award. So I'm extremely honored. It is it's a very humbling kind of an experience, and I'm still processing it, to be honest.
Well, of course, you know, when it's so hard sometimes when you're recognized for something so big, you sometimes forget. You're like, oh yeah, I did do something really cool, but because there's so many times where we're like, no, I'm just myself. I'm just doing my little old thing. Why would even people even want to listen to this? So your album, you're talking about combining cultural aspects to naturalistic sounds. So what can you tell me about your album and kind of the process of it?
Manat is based on a concept of prayer and offering that devotees in South Asia bring to a shrine. A Sufi shrine. It's Manat is a prayer or wish that is asked from a saint. And I kind of brought that concept in the realm of climate justice. As you might be aware that in 2022, my country of origin, Pakistan, witnessed one of the most catastrophic floods in its history. And about 33 million people were displaced, including 16 million children. So it was a very devastating, thing that the country is still recovering from, and we don't know where the future takes us. So the poetry in this album is based on Sufi poetry, and it's a kind of a prayer. It's a prayer for people who have been displaced. And at the same time, the album itself is dedicated to the victims of flood, and all the proceedings from the album are going to the flood victims. So the sung poetry in this album comes from two to three different traditions. One is Sindhi Kafi, and the other is Shajurak. And these are different styles of singing Sufi poetry that I've learned from master musicians in Pakistan. And I've combined these with soundscape recordings that I collected in 2020 when my city of birth, Karachi, was going through devastating floods. and thousands of families were displaced. So I began to compose Perils of Heavy Rainfall then, and that became the foremost composition that led to the album Mannat. Within the album, we also have songs that are my original lyric and music, Living with Purpose and Anticipating. And most of the music was recorded in Edmonton studios in Alberta and Edmonton with two musicians, an Iranian santur player, Mehdi Razania, and an Indian-Canadian tabla player, Ojas Joshi. And then there were algoza. Algoza is a traditional musical instrument in Sindh region of Pakistan. And those were contributed by the son of a legendary player, Khamisu Khan. His name is Akbar Khamisu Khan, and he contributed those pieces. And my originals were recorded in Toronto with a Nigerian-Canadian guitarist and talking drum player, Kunle. So this is the breadth of how the album came together. The pieces were mainly mixed in Karachi as well as in Canada.
So a real collaborative effort to bring it together, so many different people. And I really appreciate artists like yourself, and I have another one I talked to a while back, Noreen Braun, that take climate issues and tie it directly into a project. Because as we're seeing in the world, things are starting to escalate in terms of the climate disasters, and there are so many countries that are going to be affected by it. So continuing to get these messages out, changing the public consciousness, the zeitgeist of society towards being aware of this and challenging our governments and corporations, I think is so important. So thank you so much on taking an effort and really caring about things that are happening in the world.
Thanks for giving me the space to talk about it. I would also like to add that some of the soundscape compositions in Mannat that combine soundscapes, sounds of the environment with traditional poetry as well as storytelling, try to bring forward an aspect of climate action and justice that's not given its due priority, which is the kind of displacement, the impact of displacement and impact of, climate crisis on the refugees that are people whose homes have been completely drowned and they're totally displaced from their places. And living in refugee camps, these places are more vulnerable spaces for women in particular and girls in particular. So some of the pieces in my album, especially Displacement and the Great Calamity, sheds visibility on girls and women who are being impacted by climate catastrophe and because of increased insecurity as a result of homelessness.
The most vulnerable of our societies are going to be the affected the most as things continue to develop and escalate. So yeah, it's important to be aware of it and inspire others, because I know for myself, sometimes it can get really easy to get into that doomer mentality of, what's the point? Everything's too far gone anyways. But no, we can make a difference and we can help people's lives, because the floods in Pakistan, as well as the droughts that took place over the summer in China, are just some of the major things we're starting to see. So we need to continue to be aware and get together and fight for each other. So you're mentioned talking about the Sufi people. So who are they? What can you tell me about your culture?
So Sufis represent an esoteric approach to Islamic belief and practice. And in the essential way, their way is to return to the divine source from where everything has originated by following a path that emphasizes introspection and learning and knowing from the heart. So what Sufis describe is a zawq or tasting, and it refers to opening and nurturing your inner senses so that you're able to experience the divine light. So many Sufi groups place a significant emphasis on sama, which means listening. And there are elaborate Sufi gatherings that involve reciting and listening to poetry and played with musical instruments and with chanting the name of Allah and with movement. And these practices are an ascetic way to nurture the heart in ways that only divine is reflected in it. So in my context, the ways that as an ethnomusicologist, I have worked with a Sufi community in Bhitcha at the shrine of Shah Abdul Latif Bhittai. But throughout my journey growing up in Pakistan, I found Sufi poetry, even that which was kind of popularized on national media, or, you know, you could find internationally, like the music of Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan and so forth. It had a deep impact on me as growing up as a woman. That music emphasizes looking for love within yourself. And it is such an empowering concept that, you know, while pursuing, you know, a journey, a life journey, life path that is almost kind of non-conventional in my cultural settings, women are not usually encouraged to pursue performing arts, and particularly not music or dancing. And pursuing this as a central way and kind of deviating from the norm, it requires courage. It requires a one to find love and strength and acceptance and belonging, you know, within yourself, so that you can create that within the wider world, right? So I find that Sufi poetry is very empowering for me, and I seek to share that experience of empowerment through my music with other people.
That's really cool. Stepping out of the norms, being someone who is setting the path for others, because you'll be an inspiration to other women and girls out there who may be thinking, do I want to pursue a career in music or the performing arts? And then they see you and they hear your story and they're like, yes, I can do it too. So one thing that stood out to me when you're talking before was saying an ethnomusicologist. I don't think I've ever heard that term before. Is that what you went to school for?
That's right. I was studying ethnomusicology. It means studying music in its cultural context. So studying music not as a musical notation or, you know, just the composer and their intention, but rather studying the entire culture from where this music emerges and the meaning it has for its listeners. So really, it's kind of can be summarized as anthropology of music, because you're studying the musical culture and musical context.
I mean, music is so integrated within like human culture, human society, and just human development in general, right? Like, it's basically been a thing around as long as humans have been, basically.
Absolutely. Music has been a part of human culture since the origin.
So when you're kind of studying the different music and like the cultural connotations behind it and the influences, what was a moment that really stood out during your education?
For me, there was once a conference going on, Heavenly Garden Conference at the University of Alberta. I happened to raise a question and bring forward a point that became really an aha moment for myself as well as for the other listeners. And that was about growing up in Pakistan. I was part of an Islamic soundscape where I would be listening to the call to prayer, adhan, 5 times a day. And that is how my ears were tuned to the environment. A similar experience that people describe in the context here is listening to church bells. That was part of the, you know, traditional soundscapes before it was taken over by the traffic noise and so forth. So listening to call to prayer was part of my soundscape, which has completely, when I moved to when I was growing up, I didn't like it because it meant that if you're playing music, you have to stop the music and you have to conform to Islamic norms. And I was more of a nonconformist type, so many people would kind of resent that, you know, they have to stop their usual activities just to pay respect to the call to prayer. But being an adult and growing up, and being in an environment now where I don't hear call to prayer at all 5 times a day, I find that I kind of miss that soundscape. And for me, that was an aha moment that how our cultural upbringing and our enculturation in in a particular setting influences how we listen to our environment.
Your whole approach to music is so interesting and fascinating to me. Kind of how you dissect things and you look at it from almost, yeah, like an analytical or at least a research kind of focused base.
Absolutely. I think that's part of my training in ethnomusicology. My analytical lens has kind of developed, and I would certainly acknowledge my mentor, Professor Regula Bukhat Qureshi, who nurtured my mind and gave me that rigor during the course of my study at the University of Alberta.
So when someone is listening to your pieces, what are you hoping to to invoke inside of them?
With the pieces that I recently composed, Perils of Heavy Rainfall, Displacement, and The Great Calamity, I was headed was to bring the traditional repertoire in the context, in the present day context, so that the listener doesn't just look at these pieces as classical. They see its relevance and how these pieces are speaking to us in our current realities. So Displacement, for example, it's kind of the traditional poetry is the first part of the poem is a prayer to help me overcome my sufferings, alleviate my sufferings. And the second part of the poem is about service to these religious figures, but in a broad sense, you could consider it service to humanity. So these traditional pieces are preceded by a soundscape part, which brings attention to the calamity that's going on in Pakistan with regards to floods and homelessness, and a mother crying out for her girl, 3-year-old girl that went missing, and anchoring these traditional poetry and music to that mother's cry for her missing girl, alleviate my suffering, service, we need to take action to alleviate this crisis. So I'm trying my I want the listeners to be able to relate to the climate calamity, the human condition, its impact, and the need for action through the sounds of the heritage. And that's my intention, to be able to not see climate calamity only in terms of these big news bulletin headlines or statistics, through the voices of the people who are being impacted and through experiencing what's really going on. The piece, The Great Calamity, for example, brings to perspective a family that is moving through the water, through the flood waters to reach dry land. And it's from young girl's perspective about what lies ahead of her. How are things going to be? Everything gone. And the poetry is about it's Bready Bear means a great calamity, that a great calamity has, my home is confronted with that, and it's a prayer to alleviate the suffering that's going to be there. So I would like the listener to be able to relate with both the poetry of the heritage and with the condition of the people who are experiencing suffering at this point as a result of climate crisis.
Projects like Manat are so important because it helps take us back and show us how impactful music can be in everything, that it really is art. Because sometimes you can easily forget the amount of thought, time, the efforts that can go into creating a piece in kind of the oversaturated market that we're seeing, like just out of the United States with like the top 10 hits. Not to say that there isn't thought or time put into those works, but a project like this that you are really thinking about how it affects the world, how you can influence someone and tell that story beyond just, oh, let's get that catchy tune that sticks in someone's brain like a brain worm, but so I can really appreciate a piece that is just thought-provoking and, I guess, yeah, just art in every aspect of the word.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, even in terms of, like, my pieces were 10 minutes long, so they didn't get featured in any Spotify playlist. They did in the regional playlist, like Alberta Music featured it in their 2022's most significant albums of the year or something like that. And it did come in the, you know, playlisters that I personally knew, but by and large, if I contacted any playlisters, they didn't want to play my music, saying that it doesn't fit in their genre, it's too long, I created an entire social media post on the kind of feedback I got from Spotify playlisters on the track Displacement, and none of them wanted to, like, there was a zero placement. There were like 30 feedbacks and none of them were able to put it on their playlist. And they had this very interesting feedback. So I totally find that the media, social media and, you know, Spotify, and these can be kind of restrictive at some levels.
Do you have any other projects that you have in the works?
Yeah, I have some new projects. I'm working as an artist in residence at Trico Changemaker Studio and the International Association for Arts for Social Change, where I'm doing work on climate action and community engaged music projects focusing on climate action within Alberta. And this is one of the works that I'm doing as part of these two residencies. I'm also working on a musical. A part of it is done, but it's an adaptation of a folktale from a feminist standpoint. Also, I'm composing a newer version of a poem that I wrote called Living with Purpose. Part of that song is already out, but I'm redoing it with all the verses in that poem. It's kind of important for me, as well as it was nominated for the Alberta Magazine Awards in Poetry last year. So I want to be able to sing all the verses at some point, and I hope to present these works soon.
I'm really looking forward to it. So where can people go to find your album, Monat, your project, as well as where can they go to find out more information about yourself?
Yeah, so I have a website and it's very simple. It's my first name, lastname.com, ShamailaHimani.com. And those are also my social media handles on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. You can find me at ShamailaHimani. And on Facebook, I'm called at Oak Tree Acousmatic. So these are some of the ways of finding me, and I'll be launching a Patreon soon as well. So that would be a way to support my work.
To beat up. Nice to be back on the show. It's like, you know, our yearly check-in. I think maybe we can keep it going and, you know, just keep in touch with each other. And it's been, you know, a pleasure to know you. And yeah, a little bit about me. I'm a music artist, basically on a healing journey. I've gone through some immense health challenges over the last 8 years. And healing hasn't been linear. It's been a bit messy. And you know, it's not what you see in the movies or on media. It's definitely like Ryan was just on the Zoom was, you know, making some roller coaster imagery and with his motion with his hands. But yeah, that's basically what it's been like ups and downs, peaks and valleys. Basically, I've turned to music as my therapy and as my method of really handling it. Because you know, the changes and the things that have been happening with me, it hasn't been an overnight fix. So I needed something that I could really turn to on a consistent basis and really get those emotions and energy and healing out there. And, yeah, that's a little bit about me. And, some of the things I've been suffering recently with a little bit more frequently have been migraines. A little bit about my story. I've had tons of skin issues. Like that was the predominant issue, was inflammation and rashiness, and that is kind of come and gone. And there'd be really intense episodes of healing crisis with the skin. And in conjunction with that, there would be tons of migraines. So like, I want to say tons, because I know from doing this song and doing some research, there's people who suffer with migraines, like almost like half the days of a month. And that's kind of like shed some light on it. But I would get migraines once or twice a month or so, but they'd be really, really intense. And you know, I couldn't eat, couldn't drink. I'll save the listeners some of the other intense things that happen, but I'm sure you could use your imagination. And would hurt when I lied down, and it just kind of had to pass. But in conjunction with the skin, this is something that I've kind of gone through over the last 5-6 years. The skin started 8 years, but the migraines really started picking up over the last 5-6 years. And last year, they would just become more frequent. The best way of kind of summing it up would be like a brain fog or just, you know, like a heavy head that really turns on. And then these symptoms that I was mentioning kind of kick into gear. That's kind of what I wanted to really capture, and that, because I didn't really have a song about the migraines or inspired by the migraines, and talking to a lot of people get them, and I wanted to create a song that really you know, spoke to those people and spoke to myself as again therapy to get it out there. I also, in conjunction with the relationships, I know I'm kind of going on here a bit, but
no worries.
In conjunction with the relationships EP, I do realize, like, you know, a good chunk of my health comes from, you know, the relationships that I'm encountered and the relationships that are impacted by the migraines. And, you know, sometimes when you try to overextend yourself or you're a really highly sensitive person, those things can trigger some, you know, emotional triggers that cause you to, you know, go into these healing episodes or healing crises. So yeah, that's a bit of a summation. I'm sure you have some, you know, questions from all that. And yeah, that's just to start it off, I guess.
Isn't it such an allegory for the human experience though? Like those peaks and valleys that sometimes we feel we're at the top of the world, And then other times it just feels like things are just so rough at the moment. Like, ugh, why does it matter? And I think for many people during this whole long, what is it, three year experience that the pandemic was, how things that we thought, oh, we're all good, or all good, could easily just be the straw that broke the camel's back, where people are dealing with mental health crises or being stuck inside all the time, how it affected physical health. And it really makes you think about, like, yeah, those moments where we do have clarity outside of the brain fog are when we need to be making the most out of things for yourself, creating music, using music as a therapy to get through those kind of hard times and kind of explain those. And I know for myself, through the whole pandemic, finding out, wow, how important human interaction is for me, being able to physically be, not necessarily have to like have a conversation the whole time or do something the whole time, but be physically in a room with someone, just have a body there, how important that was for me and something I never acknowledged before. So it is really cool to see how you've changed things and like used music to explain your story. And hopefully it's an inspiration for others that, yes, things get hard sometimes, but that's okay. We can get through it together. You never know what those trials and tribulations could help inspire inside of you. What was that process to find that creative insight? Like, what was that first moment where you're like, yes, let's go for it. Let's take these struggles and create something from it.
I mean, it really kind of just started as, it kind of like grew over the years, and like, at one point it was just like frustration, right? And it was just like a journaling. Like, I had this song called, it's kind of funny, I think Migraine Love, like the most recent one, definitely speaks to a niche audience. I also have, you know, a song called Rubik's Cube, which I think speaks to a niche audience. And then it started with this song that I have called Gluten Freestyle, which is of course another niche audience. I've got these like little pockets of tracks that are like, I guess, like cult kind of following kind of vibes. But that was that first one, Gluten Freestyle, was like, it was more like a journal entry, right? Like, it was like a freestyle. If you think about like a stream of consciousness, right? Writing in your journal, like getting out all those ideas, all those frustrations. It was kind of like that. It was like the first lines, they're trying to tell me that I can't eat no more wheat. And so it's like, that's the first line in the rhyme and the rap. And it's like, so it's like, oh man, like what we, you know, I gotta just get this out and be like, voice my frustrations, because really at the end of the day, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know why I couldn't eat no more wheat or like, and you know what I mean? So it was just a way of really kind of, getting it out there. And the more I did that process, the more I was like, oh, this is really therapeutic. This feels good. Like, this feels like, you know, regardless if anyone was listening or not, it was even before that. It was just like, yeah, let's do it. And
it's like getting energy out, right?
Yeah.
You have this energy that kind of builds up inside of you. It's not like just like calories or electricity or whatever, but like, yeah, it's this energy. And sometimes you just need to find some sort of outlet to get it up. Because I know for myself, if I don't do anything creative for a long time and I just kind of put it off, and then all of a sudden I'm like, no, I'm a nervous ball again.
And one of the things that I want to speak on is that, like, when it's kind of funny, right? Because I've seen therapists. I have an amazing energy medicine healer who's phenomenal. Shout outs to Janet Amari. but like, and been so supportive. But, you know, there's kind of like these, like, I mean, those are all amazing tools, but there's something about music and something about like that form of expression that is just a different form of therapy, right? Like, it just gets things out in a totally unique way, in a totally way that you can't get through other forms of healing, right? And whether that's physical or mental or emotional. And I think they, it kind of touches on all of them. But one of the things I also want to say is that when I put these things out in the world, and specifically, I think last time we talked, it was right around like around your finger. And while I was just starting like this relationships project, and it's kind of interesting because like you said, it is a ton of energy and you're really pushing it, like exploding it out into the world. No pun, but it really is a release. It really is like, you know, like a release, not just the release of the music, but it releases something that's been like buried inside of you, and it really heals it. And like, so I've seen certain aspects of my relationships heal since I put some of this stuff out. And then I was like, you know what, if I could heal my migraines through putting this out, like, let's do it. And there's been some really amazing things that have happened with that, in the sense that I might not do it today because I do feel the migraine brewing, but maybe over the next couple of days, like I connected with someone who is a visual artist. She creates she does paintings that converts into like digital animations that are inspired by the things that she sees with her migraines. Cause in migraines, you get these auras that you can see, and she creates art around that. So we have this collaboration where she created some visuals to my song, and it's just phenomenal work. It's just that connectedness, like you're talking about being, you know, connecting with someone, being with someone. And I feel that when I connect with someone else who's an artist, you know, collaborate, it's just like a next level of community and of healing. So I'm really excited about it.
I was just quickly Googling as you're talking, like what exactly causes headaches? And there's just such a long list of potential things that can cause it. Like, you know, just maybe a chemical change in your brain, like the blood vessels and things change, like the mucous membrane has something like some sort of inflammation, pressure in your neck. Like there's so many things that can cause it, and it is just how much it can affect a person. And there's just all these little things, and isn't that a great explanation of like life? There's so many things that in life that can kind of cause challenges or a pain, or I guess a metaphorical headache in our lives as well. So it's like, yeah, it can be hard sometimes to like figure out, you know, what is the cause of this headache in the moment?
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, there's levels, right? It's kind of like going through the whole health system, and there's like, everyone's got a theory. Everyone's got, you know, I've come across people who had them for like over 20 years. And it's just interesting to like hear everyone's stories and journeys. And one of the things with headaches is that like, it's kind of like a mental thing, to like a mental health challenges as well, right? Because you can't really see someone's headache, like you can't tangibly see it, experience it. You just, you know, have to take their word from it. And I think that's again where the art comes in, is because I can really, you know, with visuals, with the, you know, the cadences, with the things that I put into the song, you can really get a sense of, okay, this guy's going through something, you know, like, and I think that speaks volumes about the beauty of art.
Anyone who has like a chronic illness or chronic pain or something, it can be incredibly frustrating to try and articulate what that experience is like. And for yourself, you're able to express at least some semblance of what you're going through in your music, but for some it can be a challenge. I saw a TikTok the other day, and the guy was talking about just the pain scale, right? When someone comes in and, you know, they're constantly at like 10, which is the most excruciating pain in their life, and like it fluctuates, right? Like at one time something that's a 10, maybe in the future doesn't feel like a 10 anymore, but like now there's a new 10. And it could be hard to talk with doctors, right? Because they'll be like, ah, no, you're over exaggerating, right? And I mean, that's the constant struggle within the health sector. I think what was it, specifically at least in the United States, with black women are notoriously under prescribed or given like pain medications and stuff like that because of the biases within the healthcare system. So it can be hard sometimes for people who are living chronic health struggles to, you know, just have the world kind of accept and believe it at times.
Yeah, Absolutely. Yeah, it's a weird thing, you know, like I think one of the things too is trying to find people, communities of people who are going through similar things, right? Maybe not exactly, because we like I said, everyone's got their own story, but I think, you know, there is people going through stuff, and I've been fortunate enough to really find some really amazing communities. Like one, for instance, is Workman Arts. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but amazing, amazing community, like based in Toronto. And I've been able to, you know, connect with so many community members. I teach a vocals and lyrics course, and basically the community is for anyone with lived mental health addictions, challenges in their lives, and you know, like lived experience. So whatever, you know, like we can be all on different ranges or different parts of that spectrum. And it's really about healing, and everyone brings amazing energy, and yeah, I've been blessed to be a part of that, and grow with them, and you know, share my story in different programs and things of that nature. And it's just encouraging, because it's for artists, right? Workman Arts, it's for artists. So sometimes when you're really highly sensitive or something, you know, it's hard to find people who can relate. And I think given what we've all gone through, we all need to have that connection.
Yeah, no matter how niche your kind of struggle is, within the Venn diagram of human experience and existence, there are going to be people that might not have the exact same experiences as you've mentioned, but some of those experiences may bleed over into yours and yours into theirs. So you can find a community. You don't have to go through things alone. There are supports. There are things in place, and it can be a struggle sometimes to find them. And that's why it's important to have conversations like this. In terms of mental health, we've come a long, long way from how people used to perceive mental health. Having conversations with older peoples and asking them about mental health and what their thoughts are on like mental illness and like the struggles and things like that. And there's still that sort of disconnect at times, like, oh, it's just in your head. It's like, oh, because these things have words to them now, like it's all made up. Like I'm pretty tuned in being aware of right-wing politics to understand what sort of conversations they're having, what are they saying, and how to dissect and challenge them. And one of the big ones right now in the manosphere is where they're saying, no, just work out, it's fine, mental health isn't a real thing, if you believe it's real then it's real. And it's like, no. And they're like, ah, all these over prescriptions and blah, antidepressants, blah, 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 blah. No. We're not saying that exercise isn't an answer, right? Like for someone, exercise can help get them out of a depressive episode. But for people with chronic depression or things like that, medicines and therapies, and in conjunction to, you know, maybe socializing and exercising, could be the things that you need. It's not like one tool works for everyone. It's not like this binary system for human experience. It flows. Everyone's different. And that's how therapy and psychology is. It's almost like an art form, right? Where you have to figure out, okay, how does this thing work? Like, if you need antidepressants or some sort of medications, okay, is this dosage working? Okay, no. Let's try out something different.
There's no real right answer for, you know, like an umbrella approach or, you know, one thing that's going to fix everyone. But I think it's really kind of building each individual person's own intuitive abilities. I think that is what really is at the root of a lot of it, right? Is that connection to self, that connection to this knowingness and trust in yourself to you know, find out the things that you need to get through what you're getting through, right? And there's never in the community and in my own stuff, I'd used to beat myself up when I was like, oh, like this is going on for so, like this has been going on for 8 years. Like, when am I going to be able to do the things that that person or so-and-so is doing? And you know what I mean? And it's like kind of changing your perspective and changing your relationship with yourself is, I think, the best answer in terms of being able to get that guidance, get that support that you need. Because once you have that connection to yourself, then you know you can really discern better, and you can really tune out things that might not be for you, and don't judge yourself if it doesn't look the way you thought it might look, right? And like sometimes if a mental health therapy could be just putting on like a comedy movie. I'm not saying like, you know, that's the thing to do, but like maybe it could be as little as that. Yeah.
It could be for someone.
You know? Right. So it's like, you know, little things. And I think the more we are taught to have that connection and the more we are able to just realize that there's a wealth of information, and it's just about what resonates with you, you know, and that's kind of something that I've learned, and I really want to communicate that. And it's kind of interesting. It kind of ties in like, the way the conversation has been going. Like, I'm definitely going to take some of what we said and utilize that. I'm speaking at a mental health conference, mental health fair that's put on by U of T, the psychology department, called MindFest. I'm going to be talking about that. It's on May 5th. I'm going to be talking about that in like healing through music. So basically what we've been talking about, but I think it's going to be, you know, it's what we're talking about here is just stimulating me and making me realize that, okay, I need to say some of this stuff at the convention, because it's like, yeah, people need to know that it's not one size fits all kind of thing.
And I mean, it can be hard understand, like having, what's the word? Emotional, I guess emotional, mental understanding of oneself is such a struggle. It's been something that in society we're not encouraged to do, or like maybe only very recently these sorts of things. There's a very specific term that I can't remember right now.
Intelligence?
Yeah, emotional intelligence. Something that hasn't really been encouraged for a long time, just kind of like, do your thing, just go to work, blah, 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 just cogs in the wheel. But what is it? Aslov's hierarchy of needs sort of thing, where you start from the bottom, where it's just like shelter, food, and stuff like that. But now, as a species, we've gone so far that now we're starting to look at these high-end kind of cognitive needs that animals within like nature, like a fox or a bird, don't really have to worry about. Like, of course, like animals can have depression and things, but you know, having these kind of like other things like sense of purpose, sense of self-worth,
right,
goals in life, those are things that like animals don't really deal with, and are things, just thinking about life of our ancestors, like tens of thousands of years ago, just as hunters and gatherers. There's a lot of things that, like in terms of the songs where you're talking about relationships and like, you know, maybe it wasn't talking about like maybe your emotional needs back in the day, that you weren't talking about like, you know, when you're just going out to hunt a mammoth, you're not being like, oh, am I meeting the physical and emotional needs of my partner?
Right.
No, you were in a survival mode at that time. But life has changed. And so the things that we need to kind of look at and care for have changed as well.
I think things are going to keep changing, right? And that's the, you know, kind of trajectory and trend I've been seeing like with people and just even like the generations, and just like, you know, I try not to like get too absorbed in media or social content, but you see the trend.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing when we're seeing with studies in terms of generations who've grown up entirely on social media, it is not good for your mental health.
No. But on the flip side though, there are creators who are kind of starting to, especially like the younger generations, they're not going to have like the same kind of work-life approach as in us or maybe our parents or, you know, older generation.
Well, some of them have really understand the value mm-hmm. that they have in themselves. Right.
And I think that's interesting. Like there's kind of like this like under the radar movement happening, which is kind of cool to see. I mean, don't get me wrong. You could get lost in tons of social content that isn't that. But, you know, it's nice to see some younger generations really kind of embracing that and not being afraid to talk about these things that we've been talking about today, right?
Yeah, I've had some conversations with like volunteer organizations,
nice.
Things like that when talking about youth. And yes, Gen Z is really clicked in to important issues about activism, going out. They care about mental health. They care about gender identity, gender expression, and sexualities. It's one of those things that, like, if someone trans, non-binary, someone's gay, is like somewhere within the queer spectrum, it's all cool. It's all good. It's all part of the human experience, and they accept that. It's so beautiful to see that accepting nature that we're seeing from the younger generation that care about activism, that care about the environment. And that's what we need. We're going to need these inspired and excited minds to kind of make a difference. Because throughout history, like here in Manitoba, what was it, I can't remember when the Manitoba General Strike was. But anyways, like we're seeing a trend in society where things are kind of rough right now, but seeing how motivated Gen Z is, you know, maybe we're gonna see that united movement to make things better for everyone. And that is a positive thing, because I know for myself, I can all too easily fall into that doomer black pill mentality, like corporations are killing the planet, our governments don't seem to care, blah 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 blah. But you know what, there is a light, or I guess a bloom, a flower that has grown within the trash pile, and we need to make sure we protect that flower.
Absolutely, well said, for sure.
For Migraine Love, what was your process in creating it? Because you have such an interesting approach to sound and composition, and I just love it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of feeling vulnerable about it. Like, you know, like I said, it's very niche and it's very experimental, right? It's not like structured like a regular song. But with that being said, you know, it is based on migraines, and like, there's nothing really, I guess, rational about a migraine, or there's nothing that is very structured about a migraine either, right? It's just kind of like, you're talking about survival. It's just like, how can I survive this day? and it's really, that's what it was. And I just, you know, someone was interesting, like, someone intuitively told me, like, the way you create is like almost like how like a painter paints, like just, you know, free flows, like throws things at the canvas. And it's kind of, it was kind of true, you know, like really in this sense, I was just experimenting with sounds, like, oh, I like this, I like this. And then I was like, oh, I think it should go here. And it was just almost like a free flow. And one of the things that I've been doing in the promo of it, which if you know, go to my socials or anything like that, you could see that I broke the song down into four parts. And I didn't realize till after that there's actually four phases of a migraine. So, which is really interesting. So I kind of
art blending with reality again.
Yeah, I was, and it was good. It was good for the content, because I was like, oh, okay, I realized there's four phases of a migraine. There's four phases of Migraine Love. Let's release like the little clips of the video in fours. And it just felt like really impactful and really great. And I'm so thankful that, you know, it resonated with you, because for me, it just feels like, I don't know, like you were saying, I felt, I don't want to say like isolated, but I felt like maybe it'd be hard for, you know, the average person to really pick up on the nuances and the thing. I personally believe the more you listen into it, the more it's got like this kind of like, you know what I mean? overall, you get a better sense of what's going on. If you hear it for the first time, like, there's going to be people like, I don't like that. That's cool. I don't like it. But, you know, the people who are like willing to give it a chance and listen again, I think there'll be some like gems in there for you, so to speak.
So, Vivek, an amazing time talking with you again. Where can people go to find out more about yourself as well as listen to Migraine Love?
Awesome. Yeah, it's vivekmemi.com. So VivekMemi.com. And you can find all the social links at Vivek Memi on all platforms, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And yeah, that's basically where.
I've had enough. Yeah. Think I might just call it. Advance.